Hello and welcome to another edition of the Best of Mornings with Matt White right here on 1170 SEN. As you might remember, Maddie was in Adelaide for the week for the Australian swimming trials, so it's me, Tommy the producer, taking you through what was our best for this week. To kick it off on Monday, Greg Alexander paid tribute to the career of Sydney Roosters captain Boyd Cordner, who announced his immediate retirement from the NRL.
Time for the Monday Means Test with Greg Alexander.
A bit of fun this morning. Brandy, good morning to you, mate. Very, very good. Very good. We don't need to backtrack over Are You Serious? Because I'm putting you up there for a good contender, but Johnny Mack leads my way. Look, let's talk about Boyd Cordner first, because the retirement announcement is happening very soon, we understand. It's a shame, but I think a lot of us could see this one coming.
Yes. I did, and I actually feel a little bit relieved for Boyd, because I've seen what he's gone through over the last couple of years, and in particular last year and up close, because it happened through last year's Origin series when he was ruled out and after a spate of concussions through the season. They kept talking about a mid-season return to the game. I just wondered what he had to do and what he had to pass and that until that decision was made, Matty. But while it's very disappointing that Boyd's only 29 and would obviously love to continue to play, and he's been an absolute champion. He's a great man, a great leader. I feel relieved for him.
What type of leader is Boyd?
By example. Although his words are strong and the players would listen to every word that he said, he wasn't a huge talker. He was just a man that led by example on the field. And, I think if anyone just recalls what made Boyd Cordner the player he was, it was his toughness. I remember hearing about him when he came to the Roosters as a 16-year-old, an enormous raps on him and, didn't disappoint right throughout his career, but a leader is someone that people respect off the field. Like, and it's a lot of it's got to do with their personality too. But on the field, he was just led by example and would follow the players would follow, and was enormous for the Roosters in their premiership wins, in our early State of Origin wins when Freddie became coach in 18 and 19. We relied on Boyd so much as being that experience and the man that the team would follow.
Brandy, I reckon this is a bit of a double-edged sword. We're seeing a 29-year-old great of the game have to leave, obviously too early, and we're seeing it more and more. The Roosters have had their fair share of knocks, so to speak. And I think in the future, the way the game's going and the health concerns around the game, I think we will see more people leave earlier than we think, which in one way is bad for the sport and bad for the players who like longevity in careers. However, it's good for the fact that we're making sure that there's no longer-term effects. So how do you rationalise that?
It's not easy, Matt, and it's not easy. And I'm sure there's a number of players in the competition right now, that are very close to retirement with their next head knock. And you're right, we will see a lot more of it happening. We only had to watch the footy over the weekend. There was a spate of head knocks, head clashes over the weekend. It's very hard to avoid in a contact sport like rugby league. The fine line between the head clashes and not getting your head in the road of a knee or a hip when you go in for a low tackle, there's not much room for error. And we'll see more of it. I've got no doubt. We'll see clubs. I don't know how it affects players, or the length of contracts, like Boyd Cordner, and money. It does come back to money in a salary cap sport, and clubs that aren't flush with funds, how do they pay out a player, even though they get relief on the cap, how do they pay out a player that might have 3 years left on his deal, is forced to retire from the game? and he's sitting on, you know, anywhere between $700 and $1 million. They have to pay that out and then pay a new player to come in to replace him. So it raises so many questions, but we will continue to see, you know, players retire, be medically retired through repeated concussions.
Mm. Give me one more thought on Boyd Cordner. You've seen him, obviously, around Origin. You've seen the kind of leader, you've explained the kind of leader he is. Is it a seamless path into a coaching position for Boyd?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know whether, I haven't read anything about Boyd wanting to become a coach, but, you know, very well might be. You know, he's got that sort of personality, I think, that people respect. If you've got that immediately, well, that's a huge thing to overcome. A younger coach without the reputation, does have to work harder for longer to grab that that respect from the players, whereas Boyd's got it immediately. And if that's his passion, we know that he worked so hard to become the player he is, so... That's what he wanted to do, Matty. That would certainly seem possible.
On Tuesday, Australian boxing champion Jeff Fenwick joined us to preview the showdown between Paul Gallen and Justice Herney.
He is an Aussie sporting legend, a Hall of Fame boxer, and he will be ringside tomorrow night for main event for the Paul Gallen Justice Herney fight. I'm talking about the one and only Jeff Fenwick, who's joined us on 1170 SEN this morning. G'day, Jeff. Thanks for your time.
Pleasure, Matt. How are you?
Good, thanks, mate. So you'll be ringside, you'll be commentating for main events. So essentially, you're neutral. So let me put this one to you. If you had your choice, which corner would you go to support?
Wow. Yeah, put me on the floor, Cam. Look, I think what Gallen's done for the sport is phenomenal at the moment. I mean, he's giving platforms for a lot of these young guys to shine and to be seen. So you've got to thank him for that. For the effort that he's put in, I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, I gave him no hope against Lucas Brown, and look what he done. I mean, although it wasn't the Lucas Brown that I trained years earlier, but just for him to have the confidence to go out there, to get back up after getting hit from Mark Hunt, and then to continue on and win the fight the way he did. He's done some amazing things. And look, I wouldn't put it past him, but look, I think this is, wow, a huge task. I mean, Justice Herney is such a skillful guy. I think he's got amazing vision, amazing sight. He's got amazing speed. So this is going to be a total new kettle of fish for Gal. But, I mean, every time we say that, he rises to the occasion. But like I said, obviously I think that Justice Herney is going to win. I'm just being honest, Gal's a good mate of mine. Like I said, I can't thank him enough for what he's done for everybody. But, yeah, being honest and letting my head just be honest, I think that Justice Herney will win. I think that he'll win by stoppage. I think the referee may stop the fight, if Gallen is copping a lot of punishment,
On Gal, Jeff, I'm interested to know your thoughts about this. And I was lucky enough to be around as you came through your career. You remember it in the Sports Tonight days. You're a boxer, mate. You grew up in the boxing world. You cut your teeth in the real nitty-gritty of boxing. Then you see the modern-day boxer, and it can be somebody like Paul Gallen who comes through a footballing career but then takes it to the next level. Are you okay with the modern-day way that somebody can find themselves in the ring?
Yes and no. I mean, when you look at Gal, you got to say, at the start, and it's been for money, but then they've put in all these crazy challenges, thinking, Mark Hunt. But look, we've got to look at and be realistic. And I'm honest. Like, Mark Hunt was old and didn't really give what he should have given. He thought once he heard Gallen that he'd hurt him again and knock him out. That didn't happen because Gallen's smarter than that. He got so much, such a strong mental capacity. I don't talk about it. I talk about everything comes from the head first. And then we look at Lucas Brown. And just for him to say, I wanted to fight him, and for Gallen to have that self-belief that he could go in there and compete and even beat him, it's crazy. So, look, there are a lot of people who have come into the sport that I think that shouldn't be there. And a lot of these times I watch some of these footballers and box, I think it's a circus and it's an embarrassment to the boys who are training their backsides off and are getting $1,500 for a fight, and these guys are getting $10,000 and $20,000. It's a complete embarrassment. But like I said, who can complain about people making money if they can make the most out of that opportunity? And that's how I am in life. I just think every day goes ahead, and hopefully the guys who are boxing, and they'll get their chance later on, and doing it the tough way, of course, but beating guys who can fight and slowly getting up the ladder, and then hopefully earning their fortune later. But some of these guys have just, you know, like I said, step in the ring, yeah, knowing that. Like I said, I mean, these two footballers, lots of times both of them can't fight, so it's a joke. But Paul Gallen certainly turned that on its head. But look, I said, he's got his ultimate test on Wednesday. His ultimate test is against Justice Hooney, because Justice Hooney is an amazingly gifted fighter. Lucas Brown was a bit over the hill, old and so on. So Mark Hunt, same. But now he's got a real test. And look, I think it's going to be, well, it's going to be the hardest test. But like I said, preparation's everything. I know Gal's given it 110% preparation. So all I can do is wish him luck. But I think he's up against it.
Jeff, you went to the 1984 Summer Olympics in LA. And that Paul Gallen's been saying to Justice Hooney, you know, I'm going to break your Olympic dream. You're heading off to Tokyo in 40 days. I'm going to knock you out. I'm going to stop your Olympic dream. If somebody said that to you before LA, which didn't play out the way you wanted it to, how much would that have rankled you?
Yeah, wow. Well, listen, what would have rankled me more, which in a way it upset me, when Justice Hooney let Gallen talk about his father in that way, saying his dad living, you know, which it's a lot of dad. But if somebody said that about my dad, Paul Gallen would have been knocked out there and then on the stage. I wouldn't let nobody belittle my father. And that's what he done. And I mean, for Justice Hooney to sit there was a huge shock to me. And I was like, wow, you're letting somebody talk about your dad? So I don't know. Look, we do know Gallen's made of really tough stuff. Hooney's yet to prove himself. And we've seen on social media, you know, certain things that have happened and so on. So, but like I said, for me, this is not a test for Justice Hooney. This should just be a walk in the park. He should have no problems. If he has problems with this, he's going to have huge problems in his boxing career. And that's my honest opinion. I'm not underestimating or not taking any away from Gal, but man, I think anybody that can box, semi-box, and can punch would have a relatively easy day with Gal, because I just think that he's still in the novice stages. He's learning. He's very strong. He can punch, and that's all he's got. So if you can box and you can navigate that ring space, you should have no problems. And I think that Justice Hooney has all that.
When the fight gets underway tomorrow night, you'll be ringside. You'll be there for main event. What will you be looking for in the first couple of minutes?
I'll be looking for Paul Gallen to get as close as he can to Justice Hooney's chest and to bowl some big shots over the top of, his lead and his both hands that Justice holds down a little. He's got to. He's got to try to hurt him and get respect early. If he doesn't do that, if he lets Justice Hooney get into his rhythm, it'll be a walk in the park for Justice. But if Gal can hurt him and do what he's done to Lucas Brown and take a couple of risks, which he's going to have to, but if they're calculated risks, I think that, yeah, like I said, you never know. Boxing's, especially in the heavyweight division, you're one punch away from disaster.
Just before I get your final say on the fight, can I just ask you about the concussion situation? You follow rugby league all your life. You know what the discussion is around there. And late last year, you said that you'll be donating your brain to the Australian Sports Brain Bank. It's an important thing, isn't it, for us to make sure that we get as much research into this as we can?
Oh, definitely so. I mean, look, when I think about what happened to all of us yesteryear, like, you know, we'd get, you know, not me, but other people that I'd spar, you'd knock them down two or three times in a round, they'd still get back up and they'd try it on. And, you know, I'm really happy with the way things are going. And in rugby league, the only thing that upsets me at the moment is, and I'll say this openly, I was invited to a soccer game 5 years ago, and how many years ago was that, when Australia played in one of those big games. And in the first 5 minutes, these people laying on the floor, screaming, you know, faking injuries. I just walked out of the place. I couldn't stand it. And now the same's happening in rugby league. These guys are faking injuries. And listen, they're getting people simbed and getting people sent off to win the game. If you don't believe you can win fairly with 13 players, we've got to try to enforce these rules so they're a little better. I mean, of course, we've got to worry about concussions. But I think the same thing. If somebody puts it on and acts and isn't really hurt, they're the ones that should go to the sin bin. They should be suspended for, you know, for spoiling our game. We've got to find a medium to this. And like I said, I'm totally 1,000,000% to support, you know, people with concussions and so on and to look after the future of people in the future instead of just at the time we're looking at. You know, I look at Boyd Cornett when he retired. Man, what a champion. The way that he's handled it's been amazing. And it's going to happen to a lot more rugby league players. But I'm saying, yeah, and we've got to change the way we tackle a few things like that. But we've also got to change, you know, the way these guys are now laying down and pretending they're hurt. And like I said, we're supposed to be mates that are playing. Or at the time we play, we're not mates. But we all want to, you know, we don't want to see somebody suspended or sin-binned for something they didn't really even mean or didn't do. And like I said, for me, rugby league's lost a lot of its character for me. Like your job is to get a rugby league team tied. Then you take, if you've got a super fit team, you run them around. Then you make the most of it. Today, all of a sudden, somebody just, you know, fakes an injury. And you've got 3 minutes to recover. 3 minutes, man. We recover in 30 seconds in boxing in a minute. So, like I said, as good as it is, I think it's opened the doors up, maybe to ruin our game.
There you go, rugby league. It's a fairly huge statement from a man who loves the game and who is one of the toughest boxers in the world. If you're not hurt, don't lie down. Final say, Jeff, on Paul Gallen v. Justice Hooney. Like I say, you'll be there main event, so give us your call.
My final say is I hope that everybody sits down and watches it because Paul Gallen deserves that respect. But I honestly think that watching Justice Hooney grow up and get better and better, I think that he'll put a masterclass on Wednesday night, and all the people who watch it will see somebody who's very, very special in Justice Hooney.
Good on you, mate. Great to catch up. Enjoy the fight.
Thank you. Thank you, mate.
Wednesday saw the Sydney Morning Herald's chief sports writer, Andrew Webster, come on to discuss the rise in players milking injuries for penalties.
He's the chief sports writer at the Sydney Morning Herald. It's Wednesdays with Andrew Webster.
Morning, Webby. What do you reckon?
Good morning, Matt. Well, first of all, can I say great to be joining you from Adelaide. How is it down there? I've seen your little head on the screen here.
And my downtown Adelaide. I'm here for the Australian swimming trials. I've been here all week. So we had night four last night at the pool. Kyle Chalmers was unbelievable.
No
mate.
Dramas, Chalmers.
He was incredible in the 100 metres freestyle. He's like, when he gets into the groove, when he's at the back end of the race, he's like a water skier who's coming out of the water for the first time. So he's being pulled behind the boat, and you know when that water skier eventually pops up and all the water comes up with him and he ends up on top of the water. That's what he's like. He's a motorboat. He's huge. Yeah. He's massive. He's got a huge frame, and he got going last night. So it's been terrific down here. Good to have you in our studio. Our Microsoft Teams is working well, and I'm looking straight up your nose. So you're looking a treat this morning.
Fantastic. Luckily, I clipped the hair out before I came in. I'm in pole position too in the main studio. So I'm not just to the little dog box at the side. Yes. I'm at the main control of the Starship Enterprise. So I'm feeling quite.
That's a worry.
I'm feeling quite arrogant, like most people who stand in this sit in this seat.
Where do you stand on this situation? You would have heard my say just then.
I did.
It occurred to me as I was watching Graham Annesley that they're one step behind here at the moment. They're on the back foot, the NRL, on a lot of issues. But in my opinion, on this issue, Webby, the players are the ones who have to take responsibility to fix this.
I agree with you about 90%. To dive or not to dive, that has become the question in the NRL. Never highlighted so much as when Jack Hetherington copped a little a stray hand in the face on Monday against the Dragons, looked up at the referee, didn't get the penalty, then put his head on the ground as if he'd just been shot by a sniper from someone sitting in the stand at ANZ Stadium. The video ref had a look at it, and then they got the penalty. Now, that's not a good look for the game. That's on Jack Hetherington. That's on all the other players in the last few weeks who have been taking a dive. But the main question is what the NRL can do about it. So Graham Annesley has come out in the last 24 hours and said, we'll look at taking sanctions, but probably won't do it till the end of the year because God knows they won't put in a rule change mid-year like they have about eight in the last two seasons. But they might look at it at the end of the year. This gets eliminated straight away. if we get rid of one of those spot fires from the wildfire that you referred to in your opener, if they stop the bunker from interfering in the game. If the head high crackdown was just kept to what the referee and what the touch judge see on the field, instead of the bunker putting his nose in and seeing any incidental contact to the head and saying, well, that's got to be a penalty or a sin bin or a send-off. So if the bunker doesn't interfere like he did the other day in the Bulldogs-Dragons game, we don't have this issue. This issue is eliminated, not completely from the game, because players will always take a dive. There'll always be gamesmanship. There'll always be a debate about whether it's the right thing to do or not. And I think you'll find most of the old-school players will say that it's not. But if you remove that element from the game where the bunker is sticking its nose in, where I'd say most fans of the game and most players don't want it to be, then we aren't even talking about this morning.
I get that, Webby, but I get also that the situation is that the bunker's there and the bunker is going to stick its nose in. So it's not something that we can go along to headquarters and shut the bunker doors and say we're closing that little chapter. And I,
no, but that's
I
only just because of this edict, Matty. They never used to. Why they can't go back to what almost anyone with any common sense seems to say is that just let the bunker rule on tries, like it used to be, as it has been at various stages over the years. So yeah, I agree with you. The onus is on the player, but the NRL can do something about it. And that, as opposed to these stupid reasons that were tossed up by Annesley yesterday about maybe if you stay down, then you've got to go off the field for 2 minutes. I mean, really, what is that gibber? What is that? Is that rugby league?
Well, that's where we're going to go straight
down,
back down.
We don't know whether you're really concussed or not, but we're going to go put you in the naughty bin for 2 minutes. Or just cool your heels for 2 minutes while we bring you back on. What is the game becoming? Fair dinkum, what is it becoming? I don't know what it is. It's certainly not the game that I grew up supporting. I love this seat. I love this area.
I know, you're emboldened. You're the man of power. You're the emperor.
I am.
But this is where we go back down the path. We're going to go round and round in circles until the end of the year on the crackdown on all of these issues. We are not going to get a solution. What we can get a solution on in this department of milking and diving, we can get a solution from the players. Now, the players came out hard and fast and said, we weren't consulted in this process of the crackdown. You didn't come to us. You didn't respect us.
Yep.
So they said, had all of this taken place and we all sat down and got on the same page, then we wouldn't be in the mess that we're in. I think we all agree with that. 100% agreed. However, the players have a responsibility. And if the players have a responsibility in this part to clean up the milking, the diving in the game that's come into rugby league's not about diving. And there's only one person at the moment who can fix it, and it's the player who's going to take a dive.
Yep.
So let's take the ref out of it, take the bunker out of it, take headquarters out of it, take Graham Annesley, and as much as we want to bash Peter Volandis over the head over anything that he tries to bring in, let's put it back to the people who said, consult us, give us some responsibility. They've got the responsibility. Stop taking a bloody dive because it's not rugby league.
Yeah, as I said, I 90% agree with you, but I just think the NRL have made a rod for its own back.
Let's have a listen to what Graham Annesley said about this in terms of milking penalties. Let's see if we can make any sense of it.
We do at times see players who will stay on the ground. The referee will stop the play and then there'll be a review, and that may or may not bring a penalty. Are we seeing some gamesmanship around some of that? I think we probably are. If we think a trend develops and it continues, then we will be left with no alternative but to look at rule change options at the end of the season to try and address it.
The politician came out in Graham there. He knew he had to say at the end of the season. But like I say, Webby, on this one, City Hall is out of the loop here. The Crims are ahead of the Cops and they're not going to catch him.
Do you know what my favourite Graham Annesley story is? And he denies it, but I know other people of the NRL have said that he once made his bed before he checked out of a hotel room. He says it's not right. I do love, his nickname's Felix. I do love Graham, and I get on with him well. And I have to say, I actually feel sorry for him because he's having to implement some of the lunacy that the ARL Commission have made him implement. And I think he's been very diplomatic and very political when he talks about it at his Monday briefing for all the journalists. Mm. And again, I do agree with you with this one in terms of the diving. Most of it is on is on the players, but have we not seen the trend that Graeme Annesley says may or may not exist since the bunker has become the all-powerful, all-seeing eye in the sky of this game?
100%.
That's the question.
100%. So maybe, the trend is there.
Maybe it's everybody's fault. Maybe it's our fault. Maybe it's the fans' fault.
Of course it is. It's not gamesmanship, I'll tell you that much. It's what they're doing to get an advantage for their team. My point is that the players have an opportunity right now to say, we'll lead this. We don't need to wait for sanctions to come in. We don't need for trends, and we don't need for all this talk and summits and blah, blah, blah. We'll lead it.
It's 480 players. You can't just group the players all into one. Like, I know some clubs that wouldn't do it for sure.
Correct.
Some players that wouldn't do it for sure.
So where are we at?
So, well, I just think it's going to continue. I can't see there being a dramatic change, excuse me, in some players doing it unless the edict for the bunker to get involved in alleged high shots doesn't change.
Well,
if the players bend, Matty, then why doesn't the NRL bend a little bit? Can they not see in the last month since the Magic Round that their head-high crackdown has been completely stuffed up? When is someone at the NRL going to go, you know what, we got this one wrong. We got this one wrong. But that's not in their nature to do it. So I think there has to be a little bit each way. But that's not in the current administration's vocabulary to say they're wrong.
Well, at the moment, you get the feeling on a lot of things that the end of the year can't come soon enough. I just don't know how many fans are going to have the patience to go through the inconsistencies, there's the word, up until the end of the year. And if milking's now going to become as big an issue as getting slapped across the face and being sent off, what's a send-off, what's a sin bin, then we're starting to go down a murky road that is going to get even murkier towards the end of the year.
And on Thursday, Sydney Swans CEO Tom Harley stopped by for his weekly chat to discuss their loss to Hawthorn and the success of the Big Freeze long weekend match at the SCG.
Plenty of texts coming through about your unsung heroes and also some corrections for me as well. Correction, says this texter, Matt. De Bellum was not found not guilty. Case was dropped. He's either guilty or not guilty. Yeah, thank you for that. But I think you get the point that I was making there. But keep them coming. Appreciate all of your feedback this morning. Week 14 of the AFL has 5 matches on the line. The Sydney Swans get a break this week. They will take on Port Adelaide next week. The Swans CEO Tom Harley joins me on a Thursday morning. It's great to catch up. Good morning to you, Tom.
G'day, Matty. How are you?
Good, mate. Before we get into the nitty-gritty, the old unsung heroes, what about your day? I mean, you played in an era where there were so many big names in AFL and, of course, in your team at Geelong. Who's the ones, when you look around the league and go, they're the kind of guys that just didn't get the headlines that they probably should have?
Yeah, look, I'll be biased. I think they're generally defenders, Matty, in our game. And one of the pathways through to an AFL career is what's called the rookie list. Which means you're overlooked in the national draft and you end up on a supplementary list and forge your career that way. And, at the Swans, over the premiership years from 2005 and 2012, there have been a number of those players. Brett Kirk was a rookie. He ended up being a premiership captain for the Swans. Nick Smith was an All-Australian premiership back pocket for the Swans in 2012. Heath Grundy was the fullback. He was a rookie as well. Lewis Roberts-Thompson was a promoted rookie. Kieran Jack was a promoted rookie. So they're the sort of players I look at through the Swans. At the Cats, I played with a guy, Max Rook, who played in a couple of premierships for the Cats. He was a promoted rookie as well. And they're great stories in sport, aren't they? The guys that probably miss a few opportunities or not given the opportunities early on in the career, fight, and ultimately end up having really strong premiership-winning careers.
Yeah, 100%. You could almost build yourself a Swans team with the guys that you just put out there. Hey, at the SCG over the long weekend, this is away from Sydney on field, but Melbourne-Collingwood, of course, took place because of COVID. It's the Big Freeze match. What a weekend it was. Nathan Buckley's last game in charge there of the Magpies. More than $2 million was raised for motor neurone disease. It's an amazing weekend, Tom, and it must have been incredible for the Sydney Cricket Ground, your home ground, to be part of it.
Yeah, it was terrific. One of the things that's been great about I guess, a silver lining to the COVID situation is the collaboration between clubs. We work closely with Destination New South Wales. We've been the Swans, closely with Destination New South Wales and the SCG Trust to see whether that game could possibly get up. It did. Our cheer squad made the banner both teams ran through, which was a great touch. And the big freeze has become a highlight of the AFL calendar. We had some activations at Bondi Icebergs on Monday morning, and I sat in the stands with my two boys. I was three rows back in the Bill O'Reilly stand watching that game, and it was a great game of footy. Over 16,000 people came along, and Nathan Buckley, I think we spoke about him last week, Matty, a titan of the game, and a great result for him. A really good game of footy, and you know, to have that turnout on a public holiday on a Monday was great, and speaks certainly to the collaboration, but the advancement of the code up in Sydney, which was great, and as I say, an iconic fixture. I'm sure it'll be back at the MCG next year. It's with two tenants, Melbourne and Collingwood, but to play host for a one-off was great for the SCG.
On Friday night, 38-point loss to Hawthorn. What went wrong there?
Yeah, look, it was a really disappointing performance, Matty, and all the key metrics. The Hawks won that. They were harder at the ball and won the contested possession count. And you know, it's a very, very tough competition, and where two teams stand on the ladder is not all that relevant when it comes to the bounce of the ball. And the Hawks absolutely outplayed us. We go into the bye. The players have had 4 days off. Looking out my window at the moment, watching the boys run around and training pretty intensely at the minute. So we have a good block leading into the weekend and train again on the weekend before we prepare to play Port Adelaide over in Adelaide. It's a 1 week at a time proposition. We're sitting 8-5. We're in the 8 at the moment, but certainly not looking any further ahead than Port Adelaide. But we have to review the Hawthorn game critically, and we'll do that. We'll do that today and tomorrow to make sure that we look to address some of those areas that we clearly let ourselves down in.
And sometimes, Tom, when you come off a match like that, a match that you're not expected to lose and you go down, is it a case you want to get back out there, or a case that perhaps the bye is a good time to sit down, take stock? I mean, I'm tipping you would have wanted as a player to get straight back out and get back on the pony.
Yeah, that's one of the beauties of all the football codes is you've ordinarily got next week to atone for what happened the week before. This was leading into a bye, so I've got no doubt the players were smarting from the performance on the week, and that's not taking anything away from Hawthorn. I thought they played exceptionally well. I think as a general rule with the bye, you need to make it work for you, and there are load management decisions that need to be made on players who may have starting to get a bit sore. Thankfully, touch wood, we're in a pretty healthy position. We've had to manage a couple of our really young players in Braden Campbell, Errol Goulden and Chad Warner, expecting them all to come back through the bye. So there are players that really benefit from the bye, and there are other players who need to continue to do some conditioning work. So it's a case by case, make it work for you, but we'll be absolutely confident. We'll be well prepared for our final couple of months of the season. They're all big games, and none bigger than Port Adelaide over in Adelaide in a fortnight's time.
Absolutely. Tonight at the AFL Tribunal, Tom, Adelaide's David McKay will challenge this rough conduct charge on Hunter Clark. So it's left Hunter with a broken jaw. Now, as Sydney Swans CEO, we don't expect you to comment on other teams, other players and other incidents, but I wonder where this sits in the framework of the game at the moment. We're having this huge debate in rugby league, as you know, around concussion and high shots. How will the game react to this if the tribunal, in the opinion of the people, gets it wrong?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. And I think the overarching premise is that the head is sacrosanct. Everyone knows that. And the rules are reviewed typically on an annual basis to protect the head at all instances. Now, the debate, as I understand it, around this particular incident is whether David McKay, the Crows player, has actually broken any of the existing rules, hence going straight to the tribunal. So that's where the grey area is, and there's been a lot of commentary around that. You know, some of the commentary is very emotive. You know, the game's it's got to be hard, it's a competitive sport, all of those, that sort of line of commentary. And the other side is yes, but Hunter Clark is he's received a broken jaw from this. So look, you're right. I won't comment on it other than to say the game will continue to evolve. The appropriate review should happen at season's end in preparation for an upcoming season. The challenging part is this looks like that the review the result of the tribunal may then trigger a tweak in the interpretation of the rules, which is always a bit tricky mid-season.
As you know, I'm actually sitting in our SEN studio smack bang in the middle of Adelaide, so you can imagine it's been the talk of the town down here. Tom, thanks for your time this morning. Dust yourself off after that loss to Hawthorn. You've got a week off. Of course, you'll be playing Port Adelaide on Saturday week, so a huge one against Port Power. And we'll catch up again next week.
Yeah, look forward to it, and rest assured we'll be absolutely prepared for the game against the Power next Saturday night.
On you, Tom. Thank you. There he is, the Sydney Swans CEO, Tom Harley. So a week off for the Swans. Week 14 of the AFL begins tomorrow night, Geelong v the Bulldogs. Then Saturday, it's Gold Coast and Port Adelaide. North Melbourne have Brisbane Saturday afternoon. The GWS Giants at home to Carlton on Saturday night. So 7:25, that will begin against the Blues for the GWS Giants. And Hawthorn have Essendon. And then, of course, the following week is when the Swans will be back in action after that 38-point loss to Hawthorn, who are second last on the ladder. So a good time to take a breather.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back Monday morning with the Main Test with Greg Alexander.